Seems like we're finding more and more invasive plants in our Wisconsin landscape, and today we're going to be talking about ways to get rid of some of them. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. Mark Renz, our guest, back with us once again, professor and extension weed scientist with UW-Madison. He researches and shares information about the biology and the management of invasive plants. And we'll be talking about, there'll be some information that you'll be able to get online from our WPR.org/Larry. We've got them up already, and we'll talk about them as well as we move along today. So you may or may not have invasives on your property, but if you do, what are you doing to keep them under control? And what questions do you have about invasive plants? You can join in the number to call 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@WPR.org. Mark Renz, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be back in the dog days of summer talking about invasive plants, right?
Yeah, they kind of show up. Some seem to show up about this time of the year, or at least now we can see them better maybe a little bit. What are we commonly seeing this time of year?
Yeah, so we kind of cycle through a whole range of things. We start out the year with garlic mustard abound through much of central and southern Wisconsin. And as that matures and senesces, then wild parsnip comes up. That's that yellow flowering plant that if we get the sap on our skin will cause us a bad burn. And that's kind of started to senesce too. So the next big one, we have wild carrot or Queen Anne's lace out there. The next big one that we're on the horizon to look for is our perennial knotweeds, like Japanese knotweeds that are, you know, 10 to 12 feet tall, white flowers, big, huge shrubs, and really dominate. And so that's probably the next one we're going to be getting calls on. But we have lots of new ones we're on the lookout for as well that I'm sure we'll talk about in today's session.
Well, it's kind of the time of the year you're starting to get your yard and garden ready for fall. Are there any preventive measures that we can take to kind of prevent these invasive plants from returning to your property next spring?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing to do is to educate yourself. You know, we have a lot of resources on our website. We have a First Detectors Network that has a lot of information. So educate yourself on what species you have or nearby in your area. And then a simple thing to do is, if you're concerned about it, prevent those from going to seed and flowering. So that can limit the spread and distribution. The bad news is some of these are very well adapted to spread. So when we're walking around, and Larry, when you're going for your walks, you see those glossy buckthorn, common buckthorn, bush honeysuckle. Right now, they all have what on them? Those nice fruits.
Yeah.
And our birds love to eat those fruits. And these species are very well adapted. A great example is common buckthorn fruits cause birds to have diarrhea. So they eat more of those fruits and will release those seeds and deposit them all over in the environment. So those are some of the challenges we deal with. But maybe that's a simple thing to do, is just prevent seed productions of the ones you know are bad, and try to really get competitive plants growing in your yard specifically.
Yeah. I'm thinking about teasel, the common teasel. That was one you're going to see pretty much through the whole year.
Yeah,
at least June through November or so.
Well, and that's a unique one because it has this long inflorescence that's got this bristle cone. It looks like you're cleaning test tubes with it, and it's got this really unique appearance. It actually is a biennial to short-lived perennial, but you see that plant over many years. And what's ironic about that plant, I do lots of studies on how to control these plants. The only study I've ever done where every treatment gave me 100% control was on teasel. So it's easy to control. It's growing in areas we don't manage it is the challenge. And it produces a lot of seed too, like our roadsides. And so that's some of the challenges we face with that species.
Well, how do you get rid of it? I mean, what is that 100% control?
Well, I mean, so there's a range of options that you can do. We a lot of times evaluate different herbicides. So many herbicides are effective that won't harm the grasses. It's usually growing in grass pastures. But if you have a few plants, you can simply prevent seed production. If you can mow it or cut it so that it doesn't produce seeds, if you can do that for 3 to 4 years, you almost eliminate populations. The problem is we have patches that are literally hundreds upon hundreds of feet, that if not miles, on our roadsides. If you're not, don't know how to identify it, go to Milwaukee. There's just tons of it all over there, too.
Oh, man. Mark Wren's our guest. Question for him as we talk about invasive plants. I hope you'll join in. 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Isn't it, Black swallowwort. Doesn't that kind of mature in the fall?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of our vines. We have several invasive vines that we're on the lookout for, and that's one that we don't have widespread in Wisconsin. We have a couple populations we're on the lookout for, and we are concerned about that one. It kind of, some people confuse it with some of our milkweeds because it can have a milkweed-like pod, but it's relatively limited. We're worried about that because it's widespread in states to the east of us, particularly the Northeast. I think one that I'm more worried about that's a vine would be Oriental or Asian bittersweet. That's one that is starting to produce those yellow flowers and really can be aggressive, and we see it through all out of southern Wisconsin and is spreading into northern Wisconsin.
So what are the flowers like in that one?
In bittersweet, the flowers are rather inconspicuous, but it produces these really unique orange fruit.
That's what I was...
And the challenge with that is we have a native bittersweet. We have American bittersweet. And, you know, this is where it gets complicated, and I have lots of job security. The two species actually hybridize as well. So the native one is not very aggressive, but the non-native one is very aggressive and very problematic, and lots of research has been done. There's easy ways to differentiate between the two of them. The key is to look where the fruit is born on the stem. If it's in the axils of the leaves or where the leaves join to the stem, I believe that is the invasive one. And then if it's on the tips of the leaves, it's the native one. But double check me. I might have that backwards.
Dana in Oshkosh has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Dana.
Hi there. I have a 20-year-old hedge of what's called Amur or Siberian maple in my country rural yard. And I've just learned that it's on a restricted list classification for invasives in Wisconsin. I wondered, legally, do I need to remove it? And morally, ethically, should I? What should I do with this? It's quite a long hedge, maybe 50 feet of perhaps a dozen 20-foot high, almost to the power line plants. They're very large.
Yeah, thanks for the call. I think it's a... you know, we do bring in plants for ornamental purposes, and sometimes we don't know if these are going to behave badly on the landscape. And I think Amur maple is one of those examples of one that is rather competitive and can escape and cause some problems. I'd have to double check. I believe it is restricted. And if it is indeed a restricted invasive plant in Wisconsin, that means you can legally have it on your property. You just can't legally spread seeds or propagules of it. So it's okay to leave it there, but we probably should encourage you to reduce seed production. And if you can, eventually develop a plan to take those out. You know, they're quite large, I can imagine, and that's going to be pretty costly to remove them, though.
Yeah, so morally, maybe. Probably.
Yeah, I think, you know, it'd be nice to try to reduce the seed set. They're widespread in Wisconsin, though, so I wouldn't run out tomorrow and do all of it. But if you can develop a plan that's economical and feasible for you, and, you know, maybe just try and reduce seed production of those plants. But it's a challenge, and we have it widespread in other areas. They're dealing with a lot of it in Monroe County, where they're trying to eradicate it. I think another thing to do is just make sure to keep it away from natural areas. That's where the main concern is.
How would you reduce seeds? I mean, I can't believe you got these big trees.
Well, there's a really easy way to do that, Larry, and that'd be to cut it down. But you can severely prune it in ways that would limit its seed production. It would be a way to do stress it in some sort of way. Some of these trees don't produce a lot of seed either, too. So there are some options, but it tends to be very species specific.
Dana, thank you so much. Let's go to Brad in Eau Claire next. Hi, Brad.
Hi, thanks for having me on. My question is, my daughter has a property where there's grapevine growing around her fences and up against her buildings. It looks like a grapevine. It's just prolific, and I've been out there with a lopper and a sawzall with a brush blade but it gets pretty darn thick at the base. Is there any way to try to eradicate that? It's got a life of its own out there.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So if it is indeed a grape, we have several native grape species that are relatively common in our forests. And anyone that does a lot of work in forests has said many four-letter words when they trip and fall over hitting one of those grape species. They're really easy to identify. As the bark matures, it has this really shaggy bark that's dark autumn color. They are perennial woody vines, so when you cut it, it quickly resprouts from there too. And so I think the best approach would be first keep cutting it, and you could keep doing that, and over time it will eventually probably weaken and die. If you are amenable to using herbicides, there's herbicides you can utilize where you could cut that surface, and right after you cut it, you can apply a concentrated solution of a herbicide, and that will kill that plant so it won't resprout. And so it sounds like that might be a good approach you can explore. We have some really good resources that describe this technique in more detail and give some recommendations on that. If you go to woodyinvasives.org, that's called a cut surface or cut stump application. And you can see some pictures and some more information that describes that process in more detail.
And we have, I should ask you too, there are some things that we've got on our website that explain various parts of dealing with invasive plants.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been here, so I should have you guess, Gary. Larry, how long do you think I have been here? It's my anniversary this month. It's been, what do you think? How many years?
10 years?
15 years that 15. I've been here this month, too. So we've developed a lot of resources that we have sprinkled out through my website, and Larry has some of those resources available as well that describe that. So I would just urge you to just search maybe my last name, Wrens Weed Science, Wrens Brush Control. We have woodyinvasives.org as a website that has a lot of those resources as well.
Mark Wrens, our guest today, and he'll be with us right up until 12:30. Mark's a weed science professor and extension specialist at UW-Madison. Always great to have him come by. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. And then go to our website, too, and you'll see those sources listed at ideas@wpr.org/Larry. We'll take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Mark Wrens, our guest today, to talk about those invasives that you can pretty much easily see this time of the year. There's some of them are easier to control than others, for sure. But Mark's always happy to talk about what we can do, what you and I can do. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Margie in Mount Horeb has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Margie.
Hi. I have a question about crown vetch. It appeared here about 4 years ago and is spreading everywhere. I had used Weed Be Gone on some small patches, and that got rid of it, but it came right back. So I'm wondering what I can use to kill crown vetch, get rid of it, that will not kill lawn grass. And we have some long brome grass that's out in the field, and I'm trying to get rid of it out there, too. And if you could also repeat the websites that you had for looking up invasives. So I would sure appreciate some help on that, because it's going crazy here.
Yeah, thanks, Margie. You're not alone in this situation. Crown vetch is widespread throughout the eastern part of Wisconsin and southern Wisconsin, and really just northern Wisconsin. It's not widespread. It was historically planted in a lot of our vegetation and roadside mixes. We do have a fact sheet on our website that would give some detailed information on how to control it. And my personal lab website is wrensweedscience@cals.wisc.edu. I know that's a word for
that's long, and Wrens is spelled R-E-N-Z.
Yeah, so if you just type in Wrens Weed Science, you'll get there from Google.
All right.
Yeah.
Maybe go on, and if
Yeah, and so, Margie, as far as controlling it, I guess I have one quick question. It sounds like you have some, like, in your residential area and then some on the property behind it. Is that correct?
Yes. We have about 3 acres, and about an acre and a half is where we have, I have gardens, 45 flower garden beds. And then next to that, all the way around it, we have just long brome grass.
Mm-hmm.
And it's spread into the brome grass and from there into the lawn.
Yeah.
And, boy, we're just having a dickens of a time getting rid of it. We cut it, and it goes to seed, of course, and right now it's flowering.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
So in the brome grass fields and in the areas that aren't around the house and aren't on the lawn, there is a herbicide that's extremely effective on it. It's called Milestone. And it's in our fact sheet. It gives directions on how to use that, but you can apply it in the fall. And we've done research on multiple locations and find that you can get 100% control for over a year with the fall application. So I would look into that. Now, I want to warn you, there's some restrictions associated with that herbicide, and it cannot be applied in an urban setting like on your lawn. And the biggest restriction is it can carry over in manure and in clippings and get into compost. So we want to make sure that we're not using it where we get into compost. But if you're just having those as smooth brome fields, that would be your best option in those areas. In a lawn situation, I would probably look at some of the, look at herbicides and some of the three-way herbicides, maybe one that contains the active ingredient clopyrrolid. So Trimec would be one, and there's a couple other herbicides you may try using. And the fall is a great time to apply these on these creeping perennial plants. And so that'd be my best guess. But you're in the thick of things, Mount Horeb. There's a lot of it surrounding you, so it'll probably be a long-term battle.
Yeah, and again, information is on the websites that are available. You can also just go to ideas@wpr.org/Larry. Today's date, today's program, look under notes, and we've got the listings there. Margie, thanks for calling. Chris in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Well, hey there, Larry, and to your guest, I've probably called you over 70 times. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're coming through loud and clear, okay. Chris.
Okay, great. I'm a survivalist, Larry, and with the gentleman that called about the grapevines, you know, when they're strung up in the trees, the indigenous vines that are all the way up into the trees, and you cut them at the bottom, you can literally let those drain into your mouth or into a jar and drink the juice. They will slowly drain into a jar, and it's very healthy. It's loaded with vitamin C, and it almost tastes like the grape itself. So as a survivalist, I'll take a fish head or a mouse and put it on a rock, cover myself with leaves, and snatch a seagull or a vulture or a crow, and then I eat chicken.
Well, you want to be sure what kind of vine you got if you're trying to get the juice out of it to drink it. That would be for sure. Chris, thank you. Stephanie in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi there. So my question has to do with some weeds that are beginning to take over a lilac patch. So I started with 3 just common purple lilacs, but they're now about 23 years old. So they have spread and grown considerably. They have done really well until recently, when last year I noticed the leaves start to turn brown by midsummer and start to fall off.
Hmm.
When I explored inside my lilac patch, I found that I had some buckthorn in there, as well as kind of a viney plant that I believe is nightshade. I've downloaded an app called Seek that I use to identify some plants. So to deal with the buckthorn, a lot of it was small enough that I could just pull out. Some were really substantial, like one was almost lilac size.
Mm-hmm.
And we dug it out. My husband and I dug it out with a shovel, getting as much root as we could. The nightshade, obviously, I can just kind of pull by hand. has this contributed to the problem with my lilacs? What recommendations do you have for dealing with the buckthorn, as well as if you have any thoughts on how I can save my lilac patch? It's got some sentimental value, but like I said, it's close to 23, 24 years old.
Done any pruning of the lilacs?
Yes, we've always taken really good care of them.
But you take out, like, you go right to the base and take maybe a third of each plant as it goes along?
Maybe not quite to that extent, but pretty close.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that your problem is, well, first off, how cool is that to have 23-year-old lilac shrubs? That's pretty neat. I would say congratulations that you can do that. I think having, you know, any type of plants competing with these lilacs will potentially impact them. I'm not sure it would impact them to the level where they would have browning on the leaves. I would recommend that you would maybe submit a sample or contact our plant disease diagnostic clinic in Brian Huddleston. There may be some disease issues there. But removing those invasive plants is definitely a good idea. They're spread by fruit. So those fruits are being disseminated by birds who are probably living underneath or foraging underneath there. It sounds like if you can hand pull some of those are great. I would just caution you, do not eat the berries of those solanum. That's probably solanum dulcamara, which is a poisonous nightshade vine. The berry is very poisonous, so don't eat those. It's fine to pull them by hand, but just don't ingest them. For those buckthorn plants and other invasive shrubs that are growing in there, if you can pull them out, great. If not, you can clip them. They likely will resprout. We're doing some work with some volunteers here in Dane County Parks or City of Madison Parks of just clipping them, and we're getting about 20 to 30% mortality if we just clip the plants. And if you're really concerned, like the big ones especially, you can't pull out, maybe you cut them and you can apply a concentrated herbicide on that cut surface. And that would be the approach that I would utilize. But my guess is it might be a disease issue or a nutrient issue. You might want to take a soil sample, too.
Yeah, the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, if you type that in, UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, I think it's PDDC, I think is the acronym for that. You're going to find out how to send a sample, and maybe even some close photos would be what he might need.
Yeah. Ask for the Larry Mueller discount.
There you go, Stephanie. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. Talking invasive plants today with our guest, Mark Renz. And let's go to Gene in Northern Illinois. Hi, Gene.
Hi. My question is, we have acres for wildlife just south of the Wisconsin border, quite a few acres, and it's being taken over by Phragmites and purple loosestrife. Mm. How do you get these piss beetles that you release to eat the purple loosestrife?
Yeah, I mean, so we do have these biocontrol agents, these Gallerosella beetles, that we have a really active program. And I think Jeannie Shearer has talked on the Larry Mueller Show recently about her program and releasing them. I'm not really sure if that program extends into Illinois or not. But essentially what they do is they get nurse plants that they infect with beetles. The beetles get really large populations on those nurse plants in pots, and then they put them in those purple loosestrife areas, and then they feed on them. The challenge with biocontrol is, and this is probably one of the best examples, purple loosestrife, is it rapidly reduces the population, but it doesn't eliminate it. So you always have a little bit of purple loosestrife around. And now we're having this really interesting dance with purple loosestrife and Phragmites. We're getting Phragmites taking over a lot of those areas and crowding out the purple loosestrife. But then we're going in and spraying and controlling the Phragmites. And guess what comes back? The purple loosestrife. But the beetles populations have been down because the purple loosestrife is down. So it's really a challenge to manage those. And in those wildlife areas, I hear you, that can really be impactful, particularly that Phragmites. There's no easy solutions, Gene, on that one. We have active programs up here, and I could be happy to put you in touch with some of our land managers, and they can give you their experiences on how they're battling with it. It is a challenge and a difficult series of plants to control.
How would Gene get a hold of him?
Yeah, the easiest way is just to send me an email. It's mrenz at wisc.edu, and I can certainly put you in touch with Jeannie, who's our purple loosestrife biocontrol agent. She can give you her resources. And then Phragmites is just a beast, as it sounds like you know. We have some good fact sheets on how to control it, but there's no easy answers. And a lot of times when we go in and manage it, we end up with bare ground, and then we're back to ground zero. We don't have desirable plants there. So that's a real tough one.
Thanks, Gene. Appreciate the call. Peter in McQuantico emailed, wondering if what app you recommend to identify invasive species.
Oh, that's a great question, and I can't believe I didn't plant someone to ask that question. So there's a lot of these apps out there that now you can download. You take a picture, and up comes one species or a list of species. And I, for a long time, have been really, really interested in using these apps. And these apps can be for horticultural plants, weeds, invasive plants, etc. So I've been kind of just on my own, Larry, tinkering with this. And I find when I use it, they're right about 50% of the time. But it's amazing when they're wrong, how wrong they can be. And I'm sure there's operator error and some other issues associated with it. I think how to use those apps is use them very carefully. I'll have to pull up my phone and see what app I have on it. I know Seek is a popular one. I do not use Seek. I believe I use Plants. I'll look it up and tell you guys after the break. But look at the entire list and then really be critical of those images and make sure those images look like the pictures that you're seeing. We've had graduate students take images and come up with grasses when they're clearly broadleafs and vice versa. So use that information with a grain of salt and use that maybe to then ask an expert. Like, I use the app. It came up with this plant. Is this truly the correct plant? The good news is we just submitted for funding for our first detectors network to test these apps. So cross your fingers. If we get that funding, we're going to be looking for volunteers like you to be trained on how to use these apps, and we're going to actually test how accurate they are. There's been some work out of Michigan that shows that they can be pretty accurate with proper training, but they did those on agricultural weeds that were really small and pots. And I want to do it out in the wild in the landscape where we're training people or not. We may get Larry involved in that one.
Yeah, well, when you get that going, let me know. We'll talk about it on the air for sure.
Good.
Dave in Broadhead, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Yeah. Hi, Larry. I just have a question. Is there a way to control the wild parsnip and the hogweed? Like, when it starts coming up, if you cut it, will it die back, or does it continue growing? And the other question I had was that I heard about, I think it's a Japanese hops that was a problem in western Wisconsin along trout streams, and I'm just wondering if it's still a problem.
Yeah, great question. So quickly, wild parsnip. Well, let me talk about the other one was giant hogweed that you mentioned. Giant hogweed is a prohibited plant. We have very few populations. It's most often misidentified with cow parsnip or some other native lookalikes. So make sure you identify that one correctly. Now I'm going to shift to wild parsnip. You can control it with timed mowing. We've done research, and there's been a lot of anecdotal evidence. If you can mow plants just when they're starting to flower, that tends to be in late June, early July, down in the southern part, maybe add a week or two in the northern part. It's not when the tops are flowering, but when those secondary flowers that come off to the sides start to flower. That plant will not die, but it'll resprout. That plant resprout may even flower. It may even look like it's producing seed. But in most summers, it doesn't have enough time to produce seed, and that plant dies at the end of the year. So if you can nail that timing of when to mow it and do that for 2 to 3 years, you see a dramatic reduction in populations of wild parsnip. And we've heard anecdotally from producers that it takes around 4 to 5 years, and then they've actually eliminated it locally from their property. So Why doesn't this work on our roadsides? Well, two reasons. That window is like a two-week window, so it's really easy to miss. If you do it too early, the plant resprouts and it flowers and produces viable seeds. So you can't do it too early, and if you do it too late, guess what happens? There's already viable seed on the plant, and you're actually spreading the viable seed. So it's a really narrow window that you have to be able to catch it. The other issue, too, is, again, think roadsides. We're only mowing a 10-foot narrow width on those roadsides. So you're always getting new seeds coming in, too. So mowing is effective, but you really got to be judicial about getting the entire area and finding that source population.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it. Joelle in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. I have a short, steep hill right behind my property that belongs to the neighbor, but it's behind her garage, and it's covered for years with Japanese knotweed.
Mm.
And I'm beside myself with it. I can't think of how to get rid of it. I tried injecting Roundup, which one site, and that just didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
It's too rocky and uneven for me to crawl up there. Do you have any advice?
Yeah, we actually have been doing a lot of work on Japanese knotweeds and these perennial knotweeds, and we have a really good video on our YouTube that talks about different management options. It's a huge problem in Europe, heavily regulated in several states. You can't sell properties unless you have a plan for how to manage the knotweed. So they've been really, really aggressive on it. And we've done quite a bit of research, too. And so for those of you that don't know what these perennial knotweeds look like, there's Japanese knotweeds, there's a hybrid Bohemian knotweed, and there's a giant knotweed. They're going to start to flower any day now if they haven't already and have these small white inflorescences. It's hollow stems, kind of looks like bamboo. Really, really difficult to control. And in your case, in an urban environment, we're really limited in tools. They have this creeping root system. And so we've really focused our efforts on herbicides to be effective to control them. But in urban environments, we have very few herbicides registered for use. We have done some work, and we kind of have some recommendations that I'll just give you in the video. We've looked at using mowing in the middle of the summer when they're like 4 or 5 feet tall or 3 feet tall. Why we like to mow those plants or cut them down is that they will resprout, but by fall at this time, they're only like 3 feet tall. So when you're spraying a herbicide, it's only 3 foot, 4 foot tall plants versus like 6 to 8 to 10 foot tall plants. And then we've foliar treated with herbicides and gotten some success. And believe it or not, glyphosate or Roundup, we have gotten some success, and it is registered for homeowner use. What people usually do incorrectly is they use the wrong rates. We found that high rates need to be used in order to effectively control it. Of the Roundup WeatherMax, which is the one that we use, that's in the 6 to 8% range, which is labeled for use, but is a very high rate, and you can get effective control. You'll need to do it for several years to eradicate it, but you can get a 90% reduction if you follow that pattern.
Wow. There you go, Joelle. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. In our last 30 seconds, any one more piece of advice?
I just love being in Wisconsin. Enjoy the outdoors. And if you see a plant you don't know what it looks like, get it identified because it may be something we don't like.
Okay, Mark. Thanks so much. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you.
Okay. Take care, Larry.
Mark Renz, our guest today, professor and extension weed scientist with the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Always a pleasure to have him come by, and we'll get him back, and we will do this again for sure, because there's obviously lots of interest in it. Coming up tomorrow on the Larry Mueller Show, have you been thinking about your taxes at all? Did you file your taxes when you were supposed to? Have you got some plans for how to manage your tax situation through the coming, through the rest of this year? Well, our tax expert guest has some advice. If you're past due, definitely some advice on that, and maybe also talk about managing. That's tomorrow at 11. In the meantime, thanks for listening and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.